Hello and welcome to Cartoonist Kayfabe. My name is Jim Rugg.
I'm Ed Piskor.
Today we're going to look at five essential how-to-make-comics books, Ed. It's kind of a mouthful. Before we dive into these five essential volumes, tell us about Red Room.
Red Room abuses everything we're going to learn here today on how to make comics. Murder on the Dark Web for fun and profit is the name of the game in the Red Room universe, and this first issue comes out this month. Probably next recording session, the one after that, be able to have actual physical copies of issues to look through when we do our little plugs up front. But it's going to be three times the size of a standard Marvel DC comic, clocking in at 64 pages of complete story, you know, something that you don't get often from Jobber Comics. Here's the cover for issue two. Here's the cover for issue three. These things are going to be coming out on a monthly basis in waves of four issues. You can pre-order all issues from this first wave, the Antisocial Network, at Fantagraphics, or get it put on your pull list at your favorite comic shop. You can also bug your local shop about making sure they order the Red Room Free Comic Book Day comic, because this is going to be all original material. It's the best comic I've made to date. There are five stories in here that are all original, and the short stories kind of factor into the broader universe of Red Room, so it gets you to understand the universe a touch better. If you want to read the comics ahead of time, patreon.com/edpiskor. $3 gets you the archive. I have three complete issues up there, and new strips every Tuesday.
You can join me on patreon.com/jimrug, where you can see how I make comics. I post a lot of original art there, a lot of my notes, my sketches, and right now I'm actually going through these two comics page by page because they are based on the same story, even though they were drawn a couple years apart.
For the audio listener, what comics?
Street Angel's Dog, the yes. Image Comics Free Comic Book Day, speaking of free comic books, and Street Angel Lost Dog, which was a mini comic that I did when I started working on Street Angel comics for Image Comics. This was the first new Street Angel story I had done in many years. By the time I was finished with several issues of Street Angel, this one was down on my list as to which ones to release. So eventually I redid it because I liked parts of the story, and that's what I get into on Patreon, along with a lot of my other stuff. Like I say, original art, things I'm working on, and out-of-print zines and mini-comics that you can download at any level that you join.
You know something, Jimmy? Since I think 2015, I don't think there's been a free comic book day where one of the Pittsburgh Holy Trinity didn't have a contribution to free comic book
day. I love it, man. Keeping that tradition alive, Ed.
Goddamn right. That's my third one, too, by the way.
Nice. But we are here today to talk about some of the... I have at least four shelves of books that I would classify as how to make comics. You know, they cover a wide range of material, but I thought we would kind of look at a survey. We've looked at a few in depth, like How to Draw Comics the Marvel Way is a classic that probably everybody watching has heard of. But we'll run through a few of these, and they're almost subgenres. So the first one that I would talk about is the Aimed at Comics, How to Make Comics specifically. This is the Famous Artist's Cartoon Course. Again, I would put this in the same category as How to Draw Comics the Marvel Way.
The Landon School.
However, yes, the Landon School, which preceded this one. But you can see this was purchased by me off of eBay whenever I first got access to eBay. When it first showed up, I started looking for this. And it's an amazing, amazing document because it is all of these great cartoonists. And I wonder if there's a better list of who is involved.
I mean, they're all on the front, too.
Yes, you can see caricatures of them, but it's Rube Goldberg, Milton Caniff, Al Capp, Harry Henningsen, unfamiliar with.
A lot of these names I don't know.
Willard Mullen, Gurney Williams, Dick Cavallari, Whitney Darrow Jr., Virgil Parch, and Barney Toby. So some big names that we do know, like Milton Caniff, but a variety of different cartoonists. And as you go through, you know, there are biographies of who is, you know, what kind of comics they specialize in. But this is an amazing thing. 24 lessons in all contained here in, I don't know, 400 or 500 pages, photocopies front and back. And this was a big business in the first half of the 20th century. And I mean cartooning, not correspondence courses, although I suppose they were a bigger business back then too.
Sure.
But one of the first things that you would see is, what are applications for this? You know, this was not a recreational thing that you were going to do this as a hobby and take this course.
Gotta be
the
pragmatic.
Idea was, this is a trade.
Yep.
And, you know, you can make money doing this. And so they have some examples of where you might ply this trade. And eventually they just get into, after several pages of examples, just lists of further places where you might be able to do this. And I always am sort of sad when I see these lists, because so much of this business has sort of evolved, gone away, been replaced with different things, photography and digital media. But it's still amazing to see just where cartoonists were applying their trades and paying bills. And you could do this remotely. You know, there are a lot of cartoonists that would maybe take a correspondence course first and then end up doing their freelance work via mail.
Yeah. All that said, with these joints that like went away, you know, who wants to grow up to be a blotter? Oh, is that like blotter paper? It's like you have your own window pane acid?
I'll be honest, I'm not sure what a blotter is.
X, this could be you.
Adult books is listed, though.
The Eric Stanton route.
Exactly.
I also wonder if the Owl Cap chapter is about, you know, three sentences and is like, get Frank Frazetta to draw it.
Dude, it is not. The Owl Cap chapter... Oh, man, it's not listed here. It's something like 24 weeks or something where he goes through every single daily and talks about it, like the building of the strip. His chapter is building a humor strip, an ongoing humor strip. So you get profiles of who these cartoonists are that we're going to be getting our notes and lessons from. And I mean, like, Milt Caniff, the biggest strip cartoonist of the first half of the 20th century.
Big and, footprint.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, this is the lineage that Jack Kirby comes from.
Yeah.
To put it in perspective, just how influential this
guy
is.
Most of the action strip artists of like comic books will say Caniff and like Hal Foster and you know, the first sentence.
This is going through and telling you what to expect, but then we get into our tools. Always a fan of this. And again, pretty common if you are looking at some of these how to make comics books, they'll have a page, a section like this.
Jimmy, I finally bought a rolling pin.
Why on earth would you do that, Ed?
There is an application, and when you're making splatter comics, you dip that mother effer into your liquid Friskit, and it gums up to there, so that when you put it down on the page, you could get fine line Friskit.
Wow.
So that you don't spatter over tiny details that might be important to you. It's like when you're using like the latex kind of Friskit, then you use a paper cement eraser, one of these gimmicks. And then you pick up the boogers off of that, man. But, dude, I have a fucking rolling pen.
That's amazing. I'm old enough that I used rolling pens in college assignments.
God damn.
Yeah, exactly. This is something that we've talked about. Lifting up the edge of your ruler so that your pen's not touching the ground, but you can run a pen or a brush across that ruler to get a straight line. I've done that, too. Not easy. That you're a real inker if this is your common way of... ruling out a straight line with a dip pen or a brush.
You're a cheap inker, because all it costs is about 4 or 5 cents, man. 5 cents if you have an 18-inch ruler, and you just paste, you just tape pennies down on the downside, and guess what? Magically, your ruler isn't touching the paper.
Of course, you get into lettering, the technical side of this stuff.
Caniff's a bad motherfucker, man.
He really is. Drawing for reproduction. And these are things that we've looked at in some of the other videos that we've made. But it's very thorough, as you can see at home. You know, that's a pretty fine print that we're going to go through and explain this.
Dude, let's add another name to Duotone and Duoshade. Craft Tint Double Tone.
Single tone and double tone. It's amazing how many of these supplies used to be made. You buy them at drugstores and stuff. Anywhere, convenience stores, you could find this stuff. A lot of this early stuff, you know, half-tone engraving, I have no idea. I can't imagine that you're using that in any capacity today. But I do think this is one of the more thorough, if you're going to kind of go through this, how to make faces, expressions, figures, movement, panel to panel, all of that stuff is covered in here. And that's really what to look for in one of these like how-to guides.
Beautiful.
Is that they cover all of that material. It's really fun, too. As you get into this, you start to see like some of the different cartoonists. You'll be able to see like Virgil Parch. You know, very clearly in some of the illustrations.
This is how I discovered Virgil Parch. I didn't know his work before copying your copy.
Might be worth a dive on him at some point. He's a really interesting cartoonist, in my opinion. I like his line work. Assignments at the end of each chapter. Another thing that elevates this a bit. If you're looking for, you know, some kind of a How to Make Comics course. This is a good one because it has some very specific exercises. And again, getting into figures, you know, probably the easiest way. There's your Virgil Parch character.
Unmistakable.
Probably the easiest way to really get the overview is to just look at what the chapters are. So figures, inking, head in detail, pretty girls, you know, action, clothes, special types. There's always an animal section because at the time that was always big. Kids, lettering, getting its own thing. And then really nice, and this is several of the big cartoonists, including Milton Caniff, they go through AlCap. They go through, they get their own chapter to talk about. I assume it's their choice, but it's things that they are known for. You know, these are some of the, as we said, most influential cartoonists in 20th century. So amazing. Quite a resource, and you will learn a lot, I promise, no matter how much you know about comics, if you go through this course. The next one that I'm going to mention, Manga in Theory and Practice by Hirohiko Araki, known for JoJo's Bizarre Adventure.
Yeah.
And one of the biggest manga series in history. You know, this is a guy who came up while, you know, with some of the heaviest hitters in Shonen Jump. And, you know, he pays his dues. This book is incredible because, one, it's his perspective of how he does what he does at a high level. Mm-hmm. And so it's talking about putting your style onto these tropes and onto the standards that are expected of a commercial manga artist, and very specifically how he does put his own piece on. But it goes from the very beginning, whenever he first started out sending in his art to contests at these magazines and having the envelopes returned unopened. You know, so like step one, how do you get them to look past the cover?
I remember Rob Liefeld said whenever dudes were submitting stuff to him, I think it was like Jeff Matsuda was the only person who sent a submission in that was in like a hot pink manila envelope, man. So amongst, well, not manila, but, you know, hot pink envelope. So amongst all the manila color stuff, there's this hot pink thing. Who's not going to open that envelope, man?
I love that story. That's really smart. But it's also very sound what he's going to go through and explain in here. So you see four major fundamentals of manga: character, story, setting, themes. Most of these chapters are extremely short. You know, you see two pages for an intro, a couple of pages, you know, as you go through each chapter. Very easy to read is what I'm saying. Oftentimes he ends his chapters with examples of his own manga that he can call out and, you know, use based on what he's saying in the text. You can then see it cited, you know, for visual aid. But this is a guy who is as successful as any manga artist in history, and this is like half memoir and half instruction, which makes it a very interesting read. I think every cartoonist should write a book like this. I would, if we ever get to a point where you can just download in an instant, I would read all of them.
I know jujitsu.
Exactly, Ed.
When I was out in Japan, man, people were like, oh, hey, Ed, you should do a shoot interview with Araki. And I was like,
you should have.
Yeah,
you should have. I'm in favor.
Hook me up. like we have the magic. Like, we are in the Illuminati of cartoonists, and we could just make that happen.
It's awesome. I mean, this book probably answers most of the questions we would have. And when I found this, I was just shocked it even exists. You know, it's incredible. It's really an interesting thing to read for all those reasons, because I can't think of other stuff like this.
Keep this in mind, kayfabers, because you want to watch the rest of the video. But when this video is done, just type in Araki's name into YouTube, and you could find maybe 3-4 really cool videos, where time-lapse even, where he's drawing, you know, taking an hour to draw some fresh stuff. So, very cool.
I had trouble narrowing this down to 5 essential books. Mm-hmm. So this is a sub book. This is not one of the 5 essentials. However, you know, these are both manga becoming more and more influential, I think, on American comics. And manga Masters of the Art is interviews with several mangaka. And it's both interviews and then also artist galleries. And you can see the table of contents of who is interviewed in here and some big names. Maru Sahiro, who we looked at some of his work, you know, just great artists. And talking about making comics, again, in the commercial industry of Japan, which a little bit different, but there's still a lot in common. And for practical knowledge, that's what this book does. It asks them what tools they use. There are photographs that accompany many of these interviews that show
that's
their tools
right
and their process, and even photographs of them actually drawing and seeing the steps as to what they're drawing and putting tone and relatively technical, lists of materials, all that stuff. The other subgenre that comes out of this is, I mentioned it's great to see cartoonists doing this stuff because you have all kinds of how-to books that aren't necessarily written by cartoonists you know or working cartoonists. Here are a couple of examples I recently read. Kyle Baker, a cartoonist that does a million styles, you know, 40 years of all kinds of cartooning under his belt. This is a very different approach, but easy to read, heavily illustrated. And Kyle Baker, to me, is master cartoonist. You can see just from looking at this, somewhat realistic figure style next to very cartoony caricature style, very lively, and definitely a lot of opinions on how to make comics.
It's beautiful because you want a guy like Kyle Baker to write that book, not some dude like Blitz who you never fucking heard of, who has no skin in the game, has never done anything noteworthy.
Yes.
Except make those kind of bullshit books.
I'm a little bit sad that this is our first time, you know, putting Kyle Baker under the camera, but I have a stack of his books that I would like to look at, and we'll get to. Contemporary of his that you may not think of, Linda Barry. And I love this because it's like, you know, it's like an old composition book.
Right.
And it's her approach, and she's another cartoonist that's completely singular in how she makes comics and walks you through all sorts of ideas on channeling comics making the way she does. If you're unfamiliar with her, Alt Weeklies is somewhere that her work would have appeared. Drawn and Quarterly is now, I think, printing all of it. I think doing a complete reprinting, and a contemporary of Matt Groening, Charles Burns, went to school with those guys. So colossal talent and a very unique vision and voice. Love and Rockets.
This is going to be an episode for sure. Like the How to Draw Comics, the Hernandez Brothers way. So kayfabers, get your hands on a copy of this right now, because when we do the actual episode about what Jaime, you know, his philosophy and Gilbert's philosophy.
Yeah, and you see it, materials process, very detailed.
You will not find these issues in the wild after we do that episode, so get it while it's hot.
Amazing stuff. And one more that I pulled out is the Cerebus Guide to Self-Publishing.
Huge.
This one focused more on self-publishing, but guess what? Making comics is part of self-publishing, so you get some of his input on that. You know, creating pages, creating 1,000 crappy pages.
Buy one of every single nib.
Super influential, I think, on a generation, this book.
By one of every, you know, one tablet or one piece of illustration board of every kind of texture, and essentially see what the heck you like, because comics is a marathon, man, and you want your tools to work for you.
All right, so the other books that you get into once you identify comics and what makes comics, well, you want to work on your drawing chops, right? We have lots of figure drawing books, lots of, you know, how to ink, all these tool things. This is the greatest, most technical drawing thing I've ever read in my life. Donald Graham is somebody that Disney hired once he expanded and started having instructional as part of Disney. Donald Graham's the guy who was in charge of those schools forever. And, you know, if that's who Disney is handpicking to run that stuff, it tells you a lot. I've never read anything quite like this, and to give an example, because we're not going to go through this whole book right now, you know, it's several hundred very technical pages, but there are about 20 pages on the subject of perspective, something that I'm always interested in getting better at, something I've struggled with, and probably a lot of other cartoonists struggle with. 20 pages of this, going from things like linear perspective that we all know, 2-point, 3-point, 1-point perspectives, but then getting into things like sectional perspective, which is something I had not been familiar with before reading this book. But he does just incredible things. The whole premise is based on you're working on the surface. It's a two-dimensional canvas that you have to work with. How do you create depth? How do you create points of interest? How do you create dynamic eye movement? And it is, you know, you're extremely thorough on that subject matter.
You're a kid learning to draw some stuff accurately. You can now draw a passable human figure. Drawing a picture, a well-composed picture, is a whole nother set of problems and obstacles and things that you have to figure out. And any little bit helps, man.
Yeah, this is a phenomenal book. Again, it's one of those things, if you read this, I promise you will draw better.
Yeah.
When you come out the other side. In that same vein, you know, again, thinking of craft, once you start to break down what you're doing, I need to work on storytelling. Cinematography is the thing that I would always see in interviews of cartoonists when I was trying to think of how do I get better at making comics. Again and again, I would see cartoonists reference cinematography and this book in particular. Storytelling is what I would call it, but it's things like camera angles and what do these things mean? What's a point of view shot look like? You know, why does that have meaning? Continuity is something that you might think of as like the 180 degree rule.
Yeah.
The idea, if your one character's on the left side of the room, don't switch him to the right arbitrarily. You know, let us see him cross because we understand space a certain way. And in comics, that is something I see done wrong all the time, where it's like, I'm not sure where these characters are in relation to each other. That's usually pretty important. So this idea of continuity is one of those pieces that sort of sets that up and explains it. I think I might have seen Frank Miller reference this in an interview.
There's fascinating stuff in here. Like, they, you know, talk about how the arrangement of images in terms of editing and cutting can change certain things. So you'll see the close-up of a character's eyes cut to a chicken dinner.
Yes.
Now this character's hungry. Same eyes cut to daughter. Dad loves daughter. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's a
whole chapter on it. A whole chapter on cutting. Exactly what you're saying, Ed, and where that meaning comes from. Benefits of close-ups. And you know what? I meant to mention this, because a good companion to this is the Hitchcock Truffaut book.
Yeah, sure.
The very first book that's referenced in here is Hitchcock Truffaut. And it's like page 6 or something. I remember reading this and just being so excited when I saw that, because that's a book that's really important to me. You know, and it kind of, all of these books overlap is the other thing. You're almost creating a trajectory as you read a few of these, because they do reinforce that they might say it a little different, which can help. But I feel like I get pieces from each of these things every time I go back to them. And this is really like your fundamental visual storytelling, the foundation.
Go on archive.org. You can listen to the Hitchcock Truffaut conversation. It's broken up in about half hour chunks. It's going to take you a year to, you listen to a half hour. You hear about the movies mentioned, spend time, go watch those movies, listen to the next half hour with all the fresh stuff that Hitchcock just talked about. Go see those two or three movies that he's referencing. Wash, rinse, repeat for the 13 or 30, however many MP3s there are. You're going to know some things about storytelling at the end of it.
Yeah, that book is masterful, because it just does a chronological walk through his filmography, which does make it easy to watch as you listen to pieces. But yeah, it's a real master storytelling. This is the last book from my five essentials that I'm pulling out. This is the DC Comics Guide to Coloring and Lettering Comics by Mark Chiarello, handling the color side, Todd Klein handling the lettering. Intro by Steranko. This is an amazing book. This is another one that I had been hearing about. I finally tracked down a copy. It's incredible. It made me order the other DC guides because this one is so well done. Chiarello takes coloring, which is as complex as any visual component you can imagine, and really clearly explains it in a way that made total sense to me, and I think is extremely applicable if you're trying to make color comics. So, gives a brief history of comics. We've talked about this stuff quite a bit.
The colors that you don't use, that they all use right now.
Yes. He should make that more clear. Talks about how we had 63 colors to choose from, and then they expanded it to like 124. But by the way, that expansion, erase those.
Yeah.
Just don't use those. Just stick with those original 63. He has some really cool ideas, because of course, most of this is based on digital coloring. One of his ideas is to start with those original colors, which were made in 25% increments, you know, so 0, 25, 50, 75, or 100 of each of these ink colors, and, you know, you could mix them together. Start with those because that's like the visual color language of comics. And then you start to deviate from them little bits at a time. So if you're doing skin tones, it used to be there was one skin tone, 25 yellow, 25 magenta.
There is now, no blue,
right?
As Klaus says in the Apple commercial.
Now, you know, his suggestion is you want everybody to have a little different skin tone variation. Now it's 22 and 24, or 20, you know, 20 and 26. Minor variations that are still built on that original palette that you look at an old comic, that's what it looks like. The principles of color, hue, complementary colors, value, intensity, color saturation. Intensity is something that you would see as maybe saturation in Photoshop, if you're thinking of what the counterpoint of this is. He explained saturation a little bit differently, but that was kind of my takeaway. But really good with examples, you know, of each piece as you go through. I just found it super instructive. Like I said, it's clear. It shows examples often of what happens if you do the wrong thing. Just a really great resource and pretty concise. If you look, this is not a thick book. This is a super easy read. You know, half of this book is also lettering.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a very brief history and guide to coloring in comics, but very effective.
One thing you never, ever see in every single computer colored piece that you're showing, like, it would stick out like a sore thumb if they did such a thing, but you never mix black into your colors. I'm sure he mentions that. And a lot of comics come through our offices here from the mail and stuff. One of the hallmarks of kind of amateurish color is exactly that. You will see, they'll just like pick around on the ridiculous color wheel of Adobe Photoshop. And the colors that look nice up there on the screen might have some black in them. So when it is being projected onto a piece of paper and inks are being applied, there is a percentage of black that's being added, and it just, it muddies up your color.
Yes, and he does address it, Ed, in a section about CMYK versus RGB, because once he gets to chapter 4, it gets into digital. Some of this stuff, very, very applicable to this day. Some of it a little bit specific with things like software and hardware, although Photoshop's reference, but you know, you're not sending your files in on a CD-ROM anymore. This is about a 10-year-old book, maybe even older than that. So some of that stuff is hit and miss, but the CMYK RGB and why black gets mixed in if you're working RGB and flip over to CMYK, for example, if you're not entering those color values, why that happens. It's just a perfect, it's certainly a perfect intro to coloring for comics. And for cartoonists out there watching this who are doing everything themselves like we do, I think there's some valuable knowledge in here that's pretty quick and easy to pull out. This is neat. This is where he talks about saturation, and for him, saturation has to do with ink on paper.
Mm-hmm.
So once you start putting in, like, say I said you do 25% increments of CMY, maybe you do 100 of 100% of C and 100% of Y and 50%, it starts to be way too much ink.
Yeah.
And that's what he's referring to saturation, is building up this thick ink, which ultimately absorbs light and will give you sort of this heavy effect. So that's what you're seeing there. Storytelling with color, this is great. Essentially, read your story before you start coloring. There should be a purpose behind it. And then gets into things like psychology, different techniques, black and white, monochromatic, all these different things, but how those get into like psychology and expressionistic tendencies. And now we get into the digital part, which has some important information, but again, some of that stuff has changed. So something to keep in mind if you do bother to track down this book, which I do recommend. Mark Chiarello, we sing his praises, I feel like, every week now when we're recording, Ed, but he doesn't stop. You know, like showing examples of this is wrong because this is the colorist adding shadows whenever Bruce Timm already figured out the light source. So stick with it in your coloring. Don't fight the light source if it's applied. Many artists aren't doing the light sources and leaving that up to the colorist, you know. So in that case, it is the colorist that gets to apply that light source. And you see tons of examples of that, you know, little tiny subtle gradients, spotlight of where the action is, darker water in the back. I wouldn't even notice that, but it does add up. And if you do it wrong, forget about it. So that is the coloring portion. Then we get into part 3. Lettering with Todd Klein.
And that's who you want to teach your lettering stuff, man.
Yes, indeed.
You know, if I want to learn about finance, man, I want Warren Buffett to tell me what to do. Don't give me no job guy. Give me the guys who are at the top of their game.
And he starts out right away, hand lettering versus computer lettering. This is probably a much bigger debate in the late 90s and early 2000s than it is these days, but you get to hear some of his thoughts on both sides and why, you know, the virtues of each. Getting into the tools, and this is really great because he shows the Ames lettering guide that everybody wants to know. What are all those holes for? How are they used? And spells out exactly the lines that are your letter spaces, the dots that correspond to the space in between your lines of text. It's really interesting how tight traditional comic book lettering is to me, because if you look at like digital auto letting, the space between lines, often typeset lettering, it's greater space between lines than what we find in comics and hand lettering stuff. So it's kind of a neat little detail, but goes through and shows some of these different tools that are used and how they're used. It's funny, I did a lettering video a while back same thing. Like, I'm tearing apart my technical pens for reasons that I don't totally understand we're both doing, but just showing you the equipment, I suppose, at home. And you can see him practicing his lettering form. Well, showing them off, I should say. Not practicing, but showing us how to do it. And, you know, just going through the technical parts of lettering and the different things that you have in your expressive toolbox, whether it's shapes of letter balloons, bolds, bold italics, sound effects. I love all this kind of stuff. Display lettering, you might see this on a sound effect or a splash page.
He's got a great Facebook account with many, many albums full of, like, say each album has 100 different images of either cool sound effects that he pulled or cool cover titles that he pulled. So this guy is forever a student of the game, you know, and it shows. I mean, who can beat this guy?
I love this. Having placement, whenever we looked at Barry Windsor-Smith's Monsters, that's something that I noted, was the lettering. Some complex page layouts, and yet the lettering was there as almost the directional device to keep you reading in the proper order. So I have a shelf and a half of coloring and lettering books. I think this is a really good overview. You know, these are things that people dedicate their lives to learning, which is what comics are. You know, the one thing that I didn't pull out is a how to write book. Again, shelf and a half of those books. You're not going to get all the answers in any one single volume.
And there are no answers, really. Like, you're getting pointed in directions, man. And there is general consensus agreement among, like, with other stuff.
I couldn't have said that better, Ed. It's perfect. I always think these are resources to look at whenever you're frustrated with some element of something you're already doing. These won't make you make comics. You need to be making comics. And then whenever you're frustrated at your lettering not looking right, check out what Todd Klein has to say about lettering. You know, you'll pick up those little pieces, but these books all work much better if you're practice already. And then, you know, it's just a chance to see how other people tackle really the same problem. You know, we're all starting with a blank page. How do you turn that into something compelling and exciting? These will give you some ideas if you're already in practice. If not, my favorite part of the Kyle Baker book, and I'm a little embarrassed to say this, right in the beginning he says, you got to be making those comics. When people come up to him and ask for advice, he asks to see their comics. If you don't have any, he's got no advice for you. So make your comics and then track down some of these books to fine-tune them.
Perfect. Perfect. Heck of a video, Jim. Ready to go?
I am.
Kayfabe, like, follow, subscribe to the YouTube channel, hit the bell. We'll notify you when new vids are available. What's out there, man?
Join me on patreon.com/JimRug, where you can see much more of how I make comics. Original art, sketches, scripts, basically my entire process there for you to enjoy, along with out-of-print mini comics and zines that you can download. patreon.com/JimRug.
Red Room Comics are hitting the streets May 2021, which is this month, so get your hands on copies of that. Pre-order the comics through Fantagraphics. Get your store to add Red Room to your pull list. If you want to pre-order this stuff online, hit my link tree in the description below this video. Go to the Fantagraphics site. It'll hook you up. If you want to read the comics ahead of time, patreon.com/EdPiskor. You could read 100 pages worth of Red Room comics, and new strips get put up there every Tuesday.
And leave some comments below this video of your 5 essential how to make comics titles. And right after you do that, subscribe to our Cartoonist Kayfabe e-newsletter at the links below this video to keep up with everything we have going on. You can also find Cartoonist Kayfabe t-shirts and merchandise at the links below this video.
Jimmy, give them one less set of marching orders, even though you gave them so many already, man.
Make more comics.